Howdy. Welcome to the first program of 2016. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to be with you. It's going to be a good year. We're looking at some all new categories in which to spotlight the culture of Western Wisconsin and look forward to making a big bunch of new friends this year. Today, Girls on the Run is literally girls running, but it's so much more. Today, you'll learn how girls are benefiting from this innovative after-school activity. You're going to meet Mark Neiser. He juggles in ways you have to see to believe and then adds technical bling to the experience. He's a guest of the Flambeau Valley Arts Association Friday night in Ladysmith. Jim Oliver's here in the new year, and he's got What's on Stage in Western Wisconsin, then provides a closer look at one of the productions opening this week in Eau Claire. And here is where we begin. Community theater, it's one of our favorite topics here in the Spectrum. And not only do we have a healthy smattering of wonderful venues across our landscape, some are downright historic, like the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake, which in 2016 celebrates 55 years of entertainment. Friday night, they'll be rolling out the red carpet and awarding the annual Barney Awards for acting achievements in 2015. Gail Gifford handles publicity for the Red Barn and was thoughtful enough to include us in the loop. The Barneys are coming up, and it's Friday, and everybody's on pins and needles. Price Waterhouse has all the envelopes, I'm sure.
Correct.
As they say, sure. So let's go down the categories. Here we go. Who's up for Best Actor in a Lead Role?
Brandon Brown played Vernon Gersh in They're Playing Our Song. Mm-hmm. Matthew McCunda played Danny Zuko in Grease. And Brandon Brown as Charlie in The Foreigner.
Brandon, he's got a couple times.
He got a double.
Good for him. Best actress in a lead role.
Anne Kiseley as Sonia Walsh in They're Playing Our Song. Mm-hmm. Meg Atkins as Betty Meeks in The Foreigner. And Sue Sather Larson as Gaynell Verdine Bodine in The Red Velvet Cake War.
I feel like we're on the Today Show, you know, when they announce the nominees.
I know.
This feels kind of cool. Best actor in a supporting role. Who's up for that?
Jackson Liddle as Teen Angel in Grease. Ben Heer as Ellard Sims in The Foreigner, and Boyd Stearns as Aubrey in The Red Velvet Cake War.
All right. Supporting role, best actress.
That would be Gabriella Ashland as Jeanette, waitress, and many other roles in Almost Maine, because that was those little segments. Cameron Hoff as Betty Rizzo in Grease, and Amber Gonski as Jimmy Wyvette Verdine in The Red Velvet Cake War.
All right. Minor supporting role. You don't hear this often. Best male actor in a minor supporting role.
That's Benjamin here as Vernon Skepticism in They're Playing Our Song. Mm-hmm. Jackson Liddle as Vernon's Ego in They're Playing Our Song. And Tommy Houston as Vince Fontaine in Grease.
All right. And the other side of the coin, best female actress in a minor supporting role. Who is nominated there?
Holly Wiesner as Sonia Egos in They're Playing Our Song, Anna Johnston as Cha-Cha in Grease, and Carol Hodall as Mama Doll Hargis in The Red Velvet Cake War.
Okay, and best male newcomer?
We have Brandon Brown, John Lloyd, and Matthew McCunda.
And best female newcomer? That's our last category.
Bryn Rademacher, Maggie Klonowski, and Kayla Young, and they were all in Grease. And we have one additional award that's an appreciation award that's given to one of the many volunteers that work throughout the year or years helping out in some way, and we give someone some recognition for that as well.
That's a surprise.
That's a surprise.
Okay, we'll wait for Friday to learn that. The Red Barn's been around since 1961. It's your 55th season in 2016. So how many years have
That's
the Barneys
correct.
Been given out?
I don't know that exactly, but I'm thinking, I'm sure there was some kind of award originally, but the Barneys that we give out now are handmade little wood, happy and sad.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Comedy and tragedy faces, and they're always hand-done. And that's been, I'd say, at least 30 years probably.
Gail Gifford on the phone with us. We're talking about the Red Barn Theater. Their 2015 Barney Awards are Friday. They'll be awarded at Layman's Supper Club in Rice Lake. How are nominations made? Where does that come from?
What they do is, during the year, nobody knows who they are, but there are several people who see all of the shows, and then they get together and make the nominations.
Oh,
you know, so it's always kind of a secret. who in the audience might be doing that, someone who attends all the shows. Mm-hmm, and we never know exactly from year to year who it is. Okay. It's always audience members that come for every show.
Nice 2016 season, I see. In June, you're doing a play that's pretty popular nowadays.
Well, we start our season with the Spitfire Grill, which is a musical. And then also in June, we're doing something called The Last Romance. That's a romantic comedy.
That's in June, too, huh?
Right. See, we start the season June 1st, and our shows run for 11 days with a break on a Sunday in between.
On your website, there's a mid-season musical that wasn't announced. Do you have anything to announce on that yet?
Oh, I certainly do. It is going to be Big, the musical Big.
Oh, like the movie Big?
Okay. Sometimes we can't quite get the rights right at the right time. And kinds of things scheduled. Yes, the musical Big is going to be what we are doing.
Well, when it says mid-season, what does that mean? When is that coming on?
July 13th through July 23rd. That's our middle show.
You can get something here on Spectrum West that you can't get on the website.
Yeah.
You have also a play coming in the 2016 season that was a very intense movie. What is that next one?
Wait Until Dark.
Wait Until Dark.
And that'll be in August, our August 3rd through August 13th show. Wait Until Dark.
Final show of the season for 2016 is?
Run for Your Wife. And this is one of the British farce, which we seem to always have one of these shows that has, you know, doors slamming, doors opening, people falling over each other, and those farces are always just hilarious to watch.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a crossroads time of year for the Red Barn Theater on Friday night. They're looking back on the 2015 season by awarding the coveted Barney Awards, and they're also looking ahead to a very exciting year, 2016. Gail, season tickets are available, and you can also buy single admission tickets at various locations in the Rice Lake, Shatec, and Cumberland areas. Do you have those locations?
I do. Season ticket prices are $64 and individuals are $16. And they can be purchased in Rice Lake at Baraboo Implement, Dairy State Bank, Johnson Bank, located at Marketplace Foods, U.S. Bank, and the Rice Lake Chamber of Commerce.
Okay.
In Shatec at OD Pharmacy, and in Cumberland at the Federal Bank in Cumberland.
All right. I can sense people rushing out right now. They're running to their cars.
We also announce at our banquet when our audition dates are.
Oh, cool.
And those will be Thursday, January 14th from 6 to 9 p.m., and Saturday, January 16th from 9 to noon, and they are always held at University of Wisconsin-Barre County.
Just for the first show?
No, we try to do it for the whole season.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Wow, that's convenient.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations to the Red Barn Theater, 55th season. That's impressive. Are you, like, in the annals of Wisconsin Community Theater, one of the oldest that you know of?
I do believe we are. Yes, we are. It's a wonderful opportunity that we can keep going with such talent and people involved in our program.
I'll bet, yeah. And if people are looking for a wonderful and quaint community theater experience, they call it the Red Barn Theater for a reason, because it's in a red barn.
That's for sure.
Cool.
And if it's lightning or thundering, or if our in-house little bat likes to fly around, you'll see those things every season.
Where physically is the Red Barn Theater located?
It is located in North Rice Lake at the junction of Highway 48 and County Road M.
M as in Mary?
M as in Mary.
Okay. Well, I'm going to make it there this year. It's going to be my Red Barn year.
Well, good. That'd be great. We'll love to have you. I want to thank you for all the, you know, times you give us credit and give us some review and whatever.
Yeah, but you guys are what this show's all about.
True.
Congratulations. True. Again. Thanks, Gail. I appreciate it, and have a great year.
Thank you. You also.
Again, the audition dates are January 14th from 6 to 9 p.m. and January 16th from 9 a.m. to noon, and they are at UW-Barre County in Rice Lake. The Red Barn Theater. Gotta love it. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. So nice of you to join us. Support for WPR comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, encouraging families and friends to talk about advanced care planning Information, guidance, and support resources are available at mayoclinichealthsystem.org. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. The belated solstice and early cabin fever version of White Pine. Regional open stage is tonight, if you're listening Thursday. It's the 7th of January from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at Simply Dunn Schoolhouse. That's in Downsville. Everybody welcome to share music, poetry, stories, or whatever. Or just listen and enjoy. Coming up on Spectrum West, Girls on the Run is a big deal in the Chippewa River Valley. We'll find out how and why, and Mark Neiser brings his 4D theater to Ladysmith Friday night. But first, let's keep the spotlight on community theater. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild is a regular stop on Jim Oliver's West Wisconsin Theater Company route. Let's see what's cooking for their first production of their new year.
And Then There Were None is a mystery play based on a 1939 novel by Agatha Christie. In the United States, it was both adapted and reprinted as Ten Little Indians. The play opened in London in 1943 and later in the United States. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will stage And Then There Were None, beginning tonight, Thursday, and running through Sunday and the following Thursday through Sunday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The director is Russell Slack, who is in the studio with us. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, you almost need a map of sorts to follow the changes in the title of the book and the play. When I saw a community theater production of a play in the 1970s, it was entitled Ten Little Indians. So, first place, where does the title come from, and why all the confusion for people like me trying to follow it around?
Basically, over the years, society itself has changed. Political correctness has come into play. So they've changed it from Ten Little Indians to And Then There Were None. And Then There Were None is actually the last line of the poem that's in the production.
Now, how does that poem fit into it? I just didn't remember that when I saw it.
Oh, sure. In the play itself, there's on top of the fireplace, they have on the mantle, it says 10 little soldiers in this particular production. Mm-hmm. Used to be 10 little Indians. Mm-hmm. And basically, it indicates 10 little soldiers, soldier boys, basically having some incidents where they die all the way through. And then at the end, And Then There Were None.
Oh, okay. So being careful about not spoiling the ending, tell us about the play.
It's a murder mystery, so... You know, throughout the play, you're always suspecting different characters. Agatha Christie did a really good job of her writing style to direct you to different characters as it goes through the story. Basically, 10 individuals are coaxed to a secluded island for one reason or another for the weekend. Once they get there, their first night, one individual passes away. It turns out to be murder, and havoc ensues after that.
I'm always interested in plays like that because one would think that perhaps once the ending has been revealed, so to speak, why the world knows it and nobody would ever go see the show again.
Oh, sure.
But there's a play called The Mousetrap, for example, that opened in London in 1952, I think, and as far as I know, it's still running.
It is.
And I know who did it. I was a member of the cast of the play once, and I was the one who did it. So how do you account for the popularity of whodunits that keep running and running and running like that?
Well, I think it just comes down to it may be a societal thing, as in generational. You know, I know that I've been talking to a lot of my friends of a younger generation who have not seen And Then There Were None. Mm-hmm. They didn't see Ten Little Indians when the movie came out either. So it's fresh to them. They're not aware of it at all. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. The second part, I would say, to going to any play would be seeing how each character is developed by the actor that's portraying that character. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a different spin to it. For example, our Blore is going to be much different than probably the Blore that's from any movie that you saw or even the production that you saw in the past.
I guess that's the beauty of theater, live theater, is that you see a different show every night, actually.
Yeah, it's never the same. If you think about a movie, like, okay, you could rent a movie or buy a movie and watch a movie, and it's always going to be the same every single time. Mm-hmm. If you go to three different theater productions, each one's going to be different, like you said. Mm-hmm. Each one's going to be different actors. In this situation, you will never see these actors that are going to be on stage for this particular production. Once those eight shows are done, you will never, ever see those people in that production again.
He is Russell Slack, who is director of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production of And Then There Were None. Who are the principal characters and the actors who play them?
Sure. There's Mrs. Rogers, Ethel Rogers, who's played by Karen Fenimore. Then we also have Mr. Rogers, Thomas Rogers, who's played by Kevin Brilsky. Fred Narricott, who's played by Terry Minan. Vera Claythorne is played by Anna Lucas. William Bloor, who's played by Bob Sessions. Judge Wargrave, played by Randy Feit. Emily Brent is played by Kathy Brezina. Anthony Marston, who's played by Matt Bartell. We have General McKenzie, who's played by Dave Steele. Philip Lombard, played by Josh Hamsbury. One more. We have Dr. Armstrong, Edwina Armstrong, played by Lou Hampstead. In the original production, that's actually a male part. We changed it to a female part for our production.
Uh-huh. Well, this is a fairly large cast, and the stage at the Grand Theater is pretty compact. So talk about the challenges you have in blocking the show.
With this particular production, there's 11 cast members. 10 of those cast members are on stage at the exact same time, and for some time, where they're all situated different spots on the stage. The Grand Theater is not the largest theater in the world. It's a smaller stage, which makes it nice, but it also gives it challenges. You could have actors stand in certain locations and have them not ever move. That gets a little stagnant and a little bit boring. Mm-hmm. So we did have to play a lot with having one character move in this location, another character move in that location on different lines, that sort of thing, to keep it interesting throughout the whole production. Mm-hmm. So it ends up being more of a dance than anything else.
Just out of curiosity, do you do any entrances from out in the audience, for like some directors do?
In this particular show, we have Fred Narricott coming through the audience at the beginning of the production, mm-hmm. but everything else is done on stage.
Uh-huh. You have been pretty involved in the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. You've directed two other shows, Young Frankenstein, or Frankenstein, however you want to pronounce that, I guess, and Spamalot, and you've done some acting. What got you started in this theater habit, I call it sometimes?
Oh, sure. When I was younger, when I was in junior high, I ended up doing a production of Tom Sawyer playing Joel Harper, and I really enjoyed that production. And when I was in high school, I ended up doing one or two productions in between sporting events. And then when I went to college, I didn't have time for it. So then when I got out, I always wanted to get back involved. So I did a little bit of community theater up where I'm from in Price County, in Park Falls with Northwoods Players. Mm-hmm. Then when I came down and I started living in Eau Claire, I did a couple children's theater shows. And then I started working with the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. My first show with the Theater Guild was Hello Dolly in 2004, mm-hmm. or maybe it's a little bit earlier than that. And then I've been with them since.
Uh-huh. And you're on the board of directors.
And I'm on the board of directors.
Talk about that experience. What's it like to be on the board of directors of a community theater?
For me, I've been doing a lot of stuff with the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild for a number of years, like I said, and I always wanted to pursue being a director as well, partly because arrogance, I guess. I felt I could do it better. I ended up directing a couple of shows, and then the next step was, you know, I'd like to see some change in the organization and the way that they process certain elements. So I said, okay, I'll be on the board and see if I can make changes there. Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm on the board, and I've been involved in the Eau Claire Rock and Run that we did this last summer. And then I've been working heavily on our facilities, moving our props around, our costumes around, our set pieces around, mm-hmm. trying to get that more organized, mainly for if I direct another show, it's a little easier to access that stuff.
Well, the play is Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. It opens tonight, Thursday, and plays through Sunday and the following Thursday through Sunday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. For ticket information, call 715-832-PLAY. We've been talking to the director, Russell Schlack. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Mr. Oliver. Girls on the Run and headed for bigger and better things because of it. That segment is just around the corner. But you know what? The Flambeau Valley Arts Association is at it again, bringing something bold and famous and dazzling to little old Ladysmith, Wisconsin. This time in the form of a juggler who gets bored with simply tossing around anything he can find. He adds a light show and music and comedy and some of the most spellbinding feats of balance and coordination you're ever likely to see, east of Las Vegas or west of New York. His name is Mark Neiser, as in Mark Neiser's 4D Theater. It arrives Friday at the Ladysmith High School Auditorium. I caught him at home at his Virginia homestead in his office that's separate and away from domestic interruptions. He's getting ready to hit the road. I always seem to be curious about the very first time that a skill was discovered or
try it. I'm trying to imagine a cave dweller really bored with his or her surroundings, picking up three pebbles and inventing juggling. Although I did see that Egyptian women depicted on the walls of some tombs may have been the first. Is the history of juggling something that you're a student of, or do you even care about it?
Absolutely. I'm really into the history of juggling. I actually have a picture of my mentor on the wall here, who was a great historian as well, Francis Brunn. And I have a couple books, very rare books, actually, called The History of Juggling, 4,000 Years of Juggling, by Karl-Heinz Ethan. And they're sitting in my other office there. I also have a little behind me are some antique props from some famous old jugglers that no one would know. But I'm a passionate collector of those things. But the Egyptian thing is true, I think. But imagine that moment when somebody figured out how to juggle. I mean, that must have been the ultimate sort of moment of, wait a second. I can't even imagine that moment. It's got to be wild.
Me neither,
I mean, I stumble on things occasionally as I'm creating, but I'm often taking the basis of an idea from something that exists, whether it be, you know, a baton or a hoop or whatever. Like the prop I'm working on now is the letter S, basically. If you took the letter S and made it about 3 feet high.
Is that F as in Frank or F as in Sam?
F as in Sam, right.
Okay.
And then rolled it through your fingers along the balance point in the center, filled it full of LED lights, and then spent months programming it so that each light is synced to the music. Each light, there's 130 lights in it, and each light is its own universe and can be on at any color and any brightness at any moment. So it becomes this sort of living creature, which I just broke. I just hit it against my leg and broke it because I 3D printed it, and some of the joints were quite weak.
My dad taught me how to juggle three things because he taught himself. He used to visit an uncle's farm in the summertime, and when they walked out to get the cows, he would pick up stones and juggle them. He said, here, you try this. And I was so fascinated by that. I mean, it's okay. It's easy to do two. Once you get to three, you're either hooked or you say, I can't do that. You know.
And I'm curious, are you doing it in a circle or in a triangular?
In a circle. Pattern? In a circle.
Yeah, so much, much more difficult what you're trying to do.
Oh, is it really? Yeah.
So you should switch from circle to cascade is the other way of doing it. So you're doing what they call a shower. And then a cascade is the other way, where you kind of break up the work so it's not so one-sided. So all the throws aren't coming out of one hand.
Oh.
Both hands are participating.
I just picked them up the other night and said, yeah, I'm going to get back to this because this is a lot of fun. And then I lose interest. I don't have any desire to take it any further. I just want to master that. I want to be able to walk and talk and do that at the same time. But I can't do it.
Well, the women of Tonga, the island of Tonga, use juggling almost is part of their culture.
Wow.
Only the women, and they juggle. They do also a shower pattern like you're doing. Five, six, and some of them seven-ball shower, which is very, very difficult.
Oh, my.
To do them in a circle that way. So it is a big part of people's cultures, and I think you would find juggling, you'd go further with it if you were doing the other pattern, because that pattern opens up a universe of possibilities to you all of a sudden.
I'm going to look up the cascading thing, and if I master that, you know, I'm going to say, look at, I'm nisering.
There is a trick called a niser already. It's a trick that I invented, and people call it that now.
That's a noun. I'm talking about an action verb. You know, you're gonna niser today. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, that would be the greatest, wouldn't it? I'd finally be somebody. Are you in Madison? No, you're in Minneapolis?
Close to Minneapolis, yeah.
There's a great juggling club right there. So just walk in the door and say, Niser sent you, and you will be welcomed.
I should start a juggling club.
I started one here where I live, and it's my whole social life.
What a good reason to get together.
Yeah, and exercise and do something non-destructive.
I didn't realize the exercise factor of it and the aerobic factor until I watched you online and saw you with your heart rate thing going behind you. That was kind of interesting.
Right. Well, I have one of the lowest resting heartbeats that my physician's ever seen.
I've talked many times with conductors, and conductors are physically fit for the most part, and they're kind of doing the same thing you are.
Right. Yeah, and then when you want to reach the level of being a professional, it moves from, okay, I can do this, you know, 9 out of 10 times, but to be a professional, you now have to be able to do it 10 out of 10 times, which sounds like a small move, but it takes it to a whole nother level of obsession. Not that I'm ever perfect, certainly, but I always try to push it just a little past that so that I can find the new and try new things and stuff.
And the way we're talking now about the physicality of juggling, it kind of segues into a curiosity I had as to what you consider juggling. Is juggling an art form? Is it a sport? What is it?
Well, both, really. There are people that consider it a sport and have, like, ESPN covers it once a year, this big juggling event. But it's also an art form. An art form actually confirmed by the government, so to speak. Like, for example, I can get grant money from the arts councils to bring me into local places as an art, the art of juggling. Magicians cannot, which I find interesting.
Wow.
They are not, for some reason, an acceptable, considered, quote, art.
Well, there's deception there.
So it just makes me laugh really hard. You know, juggling isn't just the throwing and the catching thing, although technically I think that would be the case. But I'm also like an object manipulator, so I bang things. Often they're leaving my hands and moving around in the air, but often sometimes they're not. This new prop, I never let go of it. I simply move it around. So it also falls into what they call flow props and, you know, balancing props. I ride a unicycle. I do things where I'm rolling balls around my face. I spin balls on my fingers, and that's more of a centrifugal force action that's keeping them in place. So I've sort of explored all the amazing things that the body can do and try to use every part of my body. I juggle with my feet. I spit ping pong balls out of my mouth.
See, that raises a question to me. I'm thinking of Mark Neiser rehearsing and just working his butt off on all this stuff. Do you ever, because I know what I would do, do you ever come up with a maneuver and you work on it, and you finally give it up because you say it can't be done?
You know, right off the bat, that makes me think of this trick called the impossible trick, which the man on the wall here is a photograph of him doing that trick, where he spins a ball on his right finger, has another ball in his foot, he throws that ball to his forehead and catches it in the balance, then he rolls it down the back of his head to his back of his neck, rolls the ball, rolls down his back, and he kicks it blind with his heel. The ball comes up over the top of his head and lands on top of the other ball, and they spin together.
Get out of here.
Very hard, very hard. And I had watched him practice, and I was like, I want to learn that trick. So I decided I would learn it. And 7 years later, I got the trick once for the first time. And now I do it in the show with the guys that I'm doing the impossible trick. So I usually takes anywhere from 1 to 7 attempts before I get it. So I just made the decision that I was going to learn that. It didn't matter how long it would take. But I have to give him credit because I knew it was possible. So the real question is, in a place where you're doing a trick that no one's ever done before, do you look at that void and say, I'm going to do this no matter what, and then make that decision? Okay. It's much easier once you've seen someone else do it, because now you know it's possible. There are tricks that I've done where I've had to just scuttle them because I have other important things I should be working on besides, you know, throwing a foam ball into a giant air circulator to try to make it come back every single time. You know?
Yeah, you have to sort of be smart about what's on the front burner and what's not, because you have shows to produce.
I can see where you still want to play, free yourself, and not be, you know, a lot of times my wife will walk in and she'll be like, you know, looking at this giant contraption I've built, and she's like, how are you going to travel with that? And I never consider that during the creative process. I don't consider it.
We're enjoying a phone conversation with Mark Neiser. He has some incredible talents. 4D Theater is what his gig is called, and he's bringing it to Wisconsin. The one that we know about is the Flambeau Valley Arts Association is bringing him to Ladysmith, Wisconsin, in the high school auditorium there, and that is Friday evening at 7:30. I'm thinking, Mark, that you must also be a good athlete in things like golf or tennis, because hand-eye coordination is what you are obviously pretty good at.
Well, I only played golf once at Pebble Beach, and I lost 18 balls in 9 holes. Apparently, I killed a dolphin also, which that's not confirmed.
Way to go.
However, I do enjoy other sports, particularly tennis, ping pong, and I do play with both hands because I like to keep both sides engaged. So I will switch, you know, hands or just play lefty for a while and then switch to righty. Not because I'm a natural talent at it, just because I like to kind of try to keep things even. I really believe, though, that I'm not necessarily better at other sports. It's just that I am very comfortable with a ball, or like soccer, for example. I'm good at soccer now, mostly because I play with a soccer ball a lot. I'm good at tennis because I've juggled tennis balls and tennis rackets and bounced them and played a lot of tennis. So it's really whatever you put your attention to. The crazy things I do, I've just put in a ton of time to get good at it. Sometimes people will say, "Oh, Mark, you're just so naturally talented," and it kind of hurts my heart a little bit because this great quote by Horowitz, he's a famous piano player for those that aren't familiar with him, and a woman came up to him and said, "Oh, I would give my life to play like you." And he looked at her and said, "I did."
Yes, good answer.
Instead of just diminishing all his hours he put in, you know.
You combine juggling, comedy, movement, music, and technology. Were you just a juggler at the beginning and then said, "I got to add something more to this?" Or has your desire to make your show just dazzling and inclusive been that way from the beginning?
Originally, I was a juggler, a scared juggler, out street performing, yelling stuff at the audience. I slowly learned doing stand-up comedy. I learned to be funny and interact. And street performing taught me that you're going to do better if you bring the audience into your show and react to them and they react to you. I did Vegas for many years, understood a little bit about lighting and that it was important and was able to use music and see how that really made the juggling that much more interesting. Then I did college gigs for 25 years where you'd show up at some room, they had no equipment or they didn't know how to hook it up, and you just stare at this vast pile of stuff and everyone looking at you like, "Well, we don't know what to do." So I would kind of, "Okay, well, we're going to want to turn these lights on so you can see me, and we'll want to plug in here for the sound." So I started to understand a little bit about that. And then before you knew it, I now am obsessed with show control, meaning I plug into the sound and the light system. I run all the video automation, everything myself. So while I'm juggling, there's this whole other thing happening. But the cool thing about the technology is you think that makes it more work for me, but it's the exact opposite. I do less work because I know my lights are going to fire exactly when I want. I have props that as I hit the prop, that prop triggers the lights. So hitting a prop in one place makes the lights green. Hitting it in another place makes them blue. Also can make tones and sounds, and those sounds can cause things to happen. It really made it this really interesting creative process where I now have this big library of ideas and things to choose from. When I create a new prop or a new trick now, I don't just think about how is this prop going to look. I'm thinking about the lighting. I'm thinking about, is it going to have lasers firing in the back? Am I going to use the hazers in my fog machine? How are the props going to get to me? Are they going to drop out of the ceiling through a little Bluetooth gadget I've built? Or are they going to launch from the wing through a compressed air cannon that I have over there?
Wow.
How is this stuff going to get there? How is it going to be lit? All these little things that make the show so much more interesting and unique.
Well, that answer in itself is going to be enough to entice people to drive to Ladysmith to see you. I guarantee that. Here's a good question for you. I don't want to turn the clock ahead faster than it has to be, but what do jugglers do when they retire?
Well, when I was 17, I read a book called Financial Planning for Dummies.
There you go.
It was very simple. It had some real simple rules in it. When I retire, I'll do exactly the same thing I'm doing right now. I will just maybe pick and choose a little bit, probably, you know, take off Tuesday so I can go to my wife's yoga class.
Maybe play golf a little more often. I think it's probably a good idea, given what you told me about your first and only
time. Well, golf is a little one-sided, and I'm a Mark Twain person who's, do you remember Mark Twain's
yes,
quote?
Yes, I remember his quote, yes, a good walk.
A good walk spoiled.
Yes, yes. Well, I didn't want to say that because I love golf. And it appears that you don't just do what you do because it's your job. You do it because you enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely. I have no intention of stopping. I just love to kind of keep exploring, keep playing, and keep finding where these new things take me as I learn new things. This latest prop I've come up with, it's kind of like a love affair with each prop. You meet it, and you're like, "Oh, what do you like, and what do you do?" And you sort of learn all the things about it, but then you get so into it, you suddenly can take it to that next level. And each prop that I use in the show, I've had that sort of strange relationship with it where I've been obsessed with this one thing. I've gotten good at what it can do and then take it to the next level. This latest prop is that same thing. So you're kind of looking at a lifetime of exploring and playing with these different gadgets and things and then deciding, "Oh, you know, this is interesting. This one's not. How important is it?" You know, for example, I used to do 8 rings in my show, and I'd have to practice that, you know, all the time to do, you know, 6 seconds of 8-ring juggling. can I do a five-ring routine for 3 minutes that will blow people's minds with different tricks? Or is it important to have that those eight hoops jump in the air for 6 seconds? So
sure.
In that case, I'm sort of deciding, well, maybe I don't know if anyone really can tell the difference between five and eight or care for the 6 seconds of benefit, you know.
Well, for people who can't juggle two or three, I think anything over that is astonishing. They're going to applaud no matter what you do. I'm glad you have this place separate from the house, because I imagine you like a mad scientist when you suddenly come up with something and you scream, I'm going to just knock people's socks off with this one. I can just imagine you saying, I can do this. It's a lie.
I do spend late nights. I was up till 2:30 last night reprogramming this thing and got up at 6 and was back in here again.
It's even more impressive that you're taking time to talk with us. I appreciate it. Mark Neiser, it's been very enjoyable. I hope to see your act someday. It sounds fascinating. I encourage people to go online and look at what Mark Neiser can do and then physically come to a theater and see him. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
You can make that happen sooner than you think. Tomorrow night, if you're listening Thursday. Tonight, if you're in the Friday audience. Ladysmith High School, 7:30. It sounds like something your kids or grandkids would thank you for and talk about for quite a long time. Mark Neiser's 4D Theater, a guest of the fervent Flambeau Valley Arts Association. You're listening to Spectrum West. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, presenting the work of international, regionally based photographers Douglas Beasley and David Eberhardt, on display through April 10th. MMAM.org. Well, Jim Oliver has a list of what's on stage in West Wisconsin. Here he is.
Number of the Stars will be staged by the Eau Claire Children's Theater at 7:30 p.m. Friday and 1:30 p.m. Saturday at the Oxford Theater. Flanagan's Wake will be staged Friday through Sunday at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. The Friday and Saturday shows will be dinner theater events. The Barron Spotlighters have scheduled auditions for Mary Poppins from 6 to 9 p.m. Monday and Wednesday and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, January 16th at the Barron Area Community Center. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild has scheduled auditions for The Cemetery Club at 7 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. Community Arts of Fall Creek will hold auditions for The Widow of Nain, The Passion of the Christ, at 7 p.m. Monday at St. Patrick Sacred Heart of Jesus School in Eau Claire. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. Girls on the Run is what it sounds like. Well, kind of. It is girls, and they do run. What it doesn't tell you is one of the more productive ways for girls between 3rd and 5th grade to learn a lot about themselves while doing their physical condition a whole bunch of good at the same time. To get all we'd like to know, I invited Kim Gillette to our studio for a bit of Girls on the Run 101.
It's one of those organizations that has been in Eau Claire for 10 years, but my goal in the last 3 years when I was hired was to really bring the organization to the front of the community. It's been a silent partner in the
community.
You've
succeeded, by the way.
Oh, good. Good to hear. But it's been a lot of fun because it is an organization that was near and dear to my heart when my daughter was in it years ago. And after this opportunity came for me, it was a great way to even learn more about the organization, which really is motivating young girls to be confident, to give them some life skills that they might not always have a chance to learn through teachers or parents, to be able to have confidence in themselves, but also to show that to others within the community and kind of grow that. And along with that, though, Molly Barker years ago, who was our founder in 2006, her goal was to get girls moving and running along with the other parts, the self-components, about building strong girls in that way. With that, obviously, Girls on the run part is what we do. We get them moving and active, but in fun, great ways. It's the challenges. Their goal is to run a 5K at the end of our program, which, you know, for a third grader and fifth grader, and even myself as a mom, it was my first 5K. So, you know, it gets those girls to accomplish something that they never had. And that feeling of accomplishment, not only in running and moving, but in just some of the life skills, kind of lends over to that. If they can accomplish this, who knows what they can accomplish. So Girls on the Run really is about, you know, having them reach some goals, having them accomplish things that they've never possibly been able to accomplish, and showing them that they can do it.
So, how do girls notice you? Where do you make contact with them?
We are in 18 currently schools locally, but what I'm doing is...
When you say we're in a school, does that mean you have literature, you have programs? What?
At this point, it is just the coaches that are there who are volunteers.
All right.
They spread the word about this time of year, which is January, that the program's coming up and available. We also have our website. We are trying to grow our Facebook and social media presence a little more, but a lot of it is also just through word of mouth. And right now, our marketing budget's slim, but we are doing what we can with just word of mouth and also having opportunities like this to in different outlets to spread the word about what Girls on the Run is and how to get involved. But like I mentioned before, these volunteer coaches will spread the word. They'll soon be telling the girls that registration is coming up, and they'll hand out flyers and let them know, you know, what it's all about, where to register, go to our website, things like that. And then from there, they will go and register to be a Girl on the Run, and there is a fee. We are not funded by anybody. Even though we are in schools, we are not funded through any school system or any state, things like that, but from some great local sponsors and then also our registration fees. The girls will sign up, and we don't turn away any girl because they can't pay registration.
Good.
Hence the reason I do a lot of fundraising and do just a lot of social outreach to, you know, a lot of organizations within the area to help support girls who possibly can't afford our registration fee, but to keep us moving and growing.
So a girl joins the ranks of Girls on the Run. What happens next?
Well, it's a 10-week program. They meet 2 times a week after school. They are taught or led by coaches who have been trained by us. And they have a chance to really become part of a group. And it's a small discussion group that deals with topics, like I mentioned, such as gratitude, such as how to deal with bullies, how to choose friends that are good for you and not just a friend that might not be the best choice, how to really give them tools like words and actions to use to maybe make those friend connections better or to find new ones that are better for them and healthier, you know. In that 90-minute time after school, they participate in a group activity that gets them moving and running, kind of geared on the topic of the day. If it's, you know, self-esteem or gratitude or community building, they work on that topic for the day. But the nice part is we try and keep it small groups, which allows a lot of the girls to talk and open up and have discussions with these coaches that have been trained by us to really ask questions they might not have time in everyday activities to ask, you know, about how to deal with a friend or how to really react in a situation or what to do when they're frustrated and they just want an outlet to do it. So it really gives them that small group time to really build that rapport with that coach and that friendship group. And a lot of these girls, because it is a 3rd through 5th grade curriculum, they meet friends outside of just, say, their 3rd grade class or their 4th. They're mixing with girls in that age group that are still connected to them in certain ways. You know, they're still in age-appropriate questions for each of them, but they might be able to either mentor the younger or even ask questions of the olders. And you see a lot of relationships being built in that group, you know, dynamic.
So it's a lot more than putting one foot in front of the other, although it is, in a big way, putting one foot in front of the other in many different ways.
Exactly. It's that building of not only your body, but your mind and how you can really get through relationships and situations and make it a positive, and how to turn some old ones around that maybe aren't so positive. We hope to give girls skills that. And one of the other big components, like I mentioned, is the community building. It's kind of the 3rd component of our 3. The first one is girls just learning about themselves. Second one is girls learning relationships with each other. And the 3rd one is that community part, where we ask each team to do a community building relationship. And it might be something as simple as cleaning up the schoolyard. Others have taken it a little further and done their own little fundraiser for things that are near and dear to their group. They give them money accordingly. Like one, I believe, did it for the Humane Society and donated because that was their cause in their school and their feeling that they wanted to do. So the girls usually pick their own projects. We ask the coaches to kind of guide them, but let them pick one that's near and dear to their heart. So it not only is building girls strong, but it's also building that community feel of there's more out there than just you. There's a community that you should be part of and how you can give back to it, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Kim Gillette has run into the studio to talk with us here at Spectrum West. She's Council Director of Girls on the Run of the Chippewa Valley. She alluded to a website. We'll give that to you in a minute. So this after-school training takes place at the school?
It does. Most of our sites right now are actually all of them are at school locations.
Okay.
So a lot of the coaches, too, are teachers or community members even that love the program and just want to be part of it. But it allows us a space that they can run indoors because it starts in the end of February and goes through May. So there are times of the year when it's still a little chilly to be outside. But we do encourage the coaches, if it's warm enough to be out there at 20 to 30 degrees, if you've got mittens and you know, there's a lot of runners who get outside and you know, if they can prepare their girls to get them out there. And then when it warms up, it's always nicer then, too, to be outside. But we do like to have an indoor backup location for those really chilly days.
You can run when it's warm, but when you run when it's cold, that's even...
It gets more motivation.
That's even more empowerment there.
Exactly.
I guess the thing that astounded me was, and I'm sure I've heard of Girls on the Run before, but the fact that there's a network of over 225 councils across the United States and Canada, which then makes it international. And you said it started in 06?
Yep, internationally. Okay. It was started in 06 in Charlotte, North Carolina by, like I mentioned, a gal named Molly Barker. We're actually going to get to meet her this year. It is our 10-year here in Eau Claire celebration, and we are having an event called the Sneaker Soiree, which will be a fun night May 13th. But May 14th is our 5K, which is the end of our season. The girls have the 5K, but Molly Barker will be here to celebrate with us. So we're really excited, and I can't wait to meet her myself.
Yeah. So where does the 5K take place?
Our 5K starts at Owen Park, and it's a loop that kind of goes up. This year we're going towards the Phoenix Park area and looping around in that neck of the woods and finishing up again at Owen Park. Yeah, it'll be a fun day. And hopefully we've had good weather for the past 2 years. I'm hoping for a third.
The four words that I read online that are part of the Girls on the Run mantra are learn, live, dream, run. Not necessarily in that order. They're listed that way, but girls might put a different word first.
Exactly. And, you know, that is kind of part of our core is learning, you know, about yourself and about how to make great relationships, living that, and then dreaming on what's outside the box, what's possible, what they can do next and accomplish with the, hopefully, the skills we give them.
So now, do you have older alums come back and say, you know, I didn't realize what this was doing for me when I was doing it, but now...
I had a chance. We have a great partner, the Eau Claire Marathon, and I had a chance to work some of the booths, and we wore our Girls on the Run shirts as a helper. And I had numerous, not only from our area, but other areas of the United States, specifically Minnesota, that come up to me and tell me how much they had loved Girls on the Run. These were, at this point, college students, and they were so thankful they were part of it. I've also had, though, locally kind of the same respect. Oh, my gosh, I remember when I was in that, and I loved it so much. So it's one of those things that just make you smile. We've had some really positive feedback and positive response from what the girls have learned and what they've gone through.
You're making me smile. Gail Gillette with us. Girls on the Run is what we're talking about. It is, we should point out, because you talked about Fundage, a charitable organization, so people can donate to Girls on the Run, and that's probably something you'd like them to know they can do.
I would love them to know. We are, like I said, we never want to turn away a girl because of her financial constraints or anything to that effect. But we do in turn then have a large part of our budget is fundraising. We do some fun events here and there, but we're always looking for great sponsors in our community and area. And we have had some wonderful ones step up this year. Gordy's will be our 5K sponsor, so we're very excited about that.
All right.
But we're always looking for some additional ones.
I keep thinking of the song Band on the Run, and I'm thinking, do you guys use that as a...
No, we don't. There's another catchy Girls on the Run song I should have brought with me, but no, but that has been brought up in other Girls on the Run events that I've been at.
Girls on the Run.
That has popped into my mind as I run sometimes. That definitely has, so I love that.
Girls now, they are enamored with this. They love it, third through fifth grade. Then fifth grade comes, and what? What can
That's
they do?
That's a great question. We actually, this there is a program within our Girls on the Run curriculum called Heart and Soul, and that is a sixth through eighth grade curriculum.
S-O-L-E?
S-O-L-E, yep,
yes,
like
okay.
The shoe sole.
Sure.
We would like to bring it to our areas. So this year we are actually writing some grants to look at funding it, to bring look at the possibility of bringing it here because, again, it would be purchasing another curriculum for us. And it is a program that ties into that 6th through 8th grade level of middle school where, again, there's just a little more drama in life, if you can remember back to those ages.
Yes.
But it definitely would be something we'd like to bring in. And we've been asked numerous times, when is that coming? The fun part is, it's a brand new curriculum from the Girls on the Run part. So they used to have one called Girls on Track, but now this new one came out about a year ago. And so we'd love to bring the new curriculum to our area. And in that growth, I just wanted to mention, too, we recently have just added Chippewa County to our area. Just Girls on the Run of Eau Claire County, but now we are Girls on the Run of the Chippewa Valley, meaning that we are Eau Claire County and Chippewa County right now. And hoping some year again to expand a little further. We've had a couple different counties ask us and outside areas ask us if they could be part of Girls on the Run of this area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, we're always looking to move and grow.
I'm very glad to hear that you are expanding. If you think about the 6th through 8th grade, it's a time when girls may feel like they're running anyway.
Exactly.
But they don't know where they're running or why they're running.
And if we can take those same core principles of who you are, what you are, and how you can be confident and increase their confidence in any way at that level, it is such a powerful tool to move into those high school years. So we hope soon that does come in, and Heart and Soul will be part of our curriculum soon.
There's also, and I must have run across this maybe on the national website, again, the play on the word soul, but soulmates.
Yes, that is actually, and you were mentioning fundraising. That is another arm of our fundraising, which is really exciting. We've never actually activated that arm till this year. If you want to be a soulmate and you love running.
That's S-O-L-E again, yes.
Yeah, yep. That you can sign up through Girls on the Run to be a soulmate. And it's, again, a charitable run. You know, you pick the run you want. And from there, you get people to pledge that you will run that far or do that your best, be a soulmate. And then the funding goes back to Girls on the Run. So
it is a
really fun kind of way to do it. And we have some fun little prizes that we give at different levels. So they get a shirt that says Soulmates, Girls on the Run, kind of a technical tee more than others, and then some motivational steps for them along the way by our coordinator.
What if they can't run very far? Can they walk?
Yes. Okay. Anything to be a soulmate partner.
Can you amble? Can you saunter?
You could saunter if you really wanted to. We'll take it.
Because that's my favorite.
Yeah. A little saunter down the road.
Yeah.
As long as your heart is in the right place and you have, you know, signed up as a soulmate, sauntering is good. We would love that.
Good. Kim Gillette, I appreciate you coming in. It's very interesting and an extremely worthy cause. And I look forward to seeing all the benefits that young girls reap from programs like this in Women of the Future.
Thank you, too.
Or Girls on the Run. The website is GOTR. Of course, that stands for Girls on the Run. ChippewaValley.org. Girls on the Run. That's pretty cool. Well, thanks, Debbie and Dean, for being Spectrum bartenders, letting others know what's on tap. And thank you for being the audience we enjoy. Keep in touch. We'll keep in step with all the marvelous things going on in the arts, music, and culture of Western Wisconsin. You can probably tell, we're wrapping up for today and this week. Next week, ski jumping history in Eau Claire, comedy promoters keep us laughing, and more on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross for Jim Oliver. Thanks. See you next week.